Thank you for joining us on Holy Family Radio for Unapologetically Catholic, a show that embraces the unique and joyful ministry of Catholic education, engaging parish and school communities with one mind and one heart. We are Unapologetically Catholic.
Good afternoon. Thank you for joining us on Unapologetically Catholic. This is Susie Furtwängler, principal at St. Thomas the Apostle Catholic School here in Grand Rapids.
Good afternoon. It's Betsy Edgerton, also from St. Thomas the Apostle Catholic School, Development and Outreach Coordinator. And this afternoon, we are welcoming Father Jim Chelich from St. Thomas the Apostle. Father Jim, we are here to discuss your writings. You have many, which we'll talk about at the end of our time together this afternoon, but we want to focus on one particular writing, and it is Forming Children of the Light. And I wondered if you might start by giving us an overview of that writing, and then we'll kind of take it apart throughout the next hour.
Sure, Betsy. Thank you so much. It's so wonderful to be here with you both and to have a chance to talk about this because it falls so core and central to what we're trying to do in raising children, forming children in faith, and educating them, giving them the tools they need to interact with the real world, but to interact in a way that is filled with hope and filled with anticipation and not fear, but anticipation that there is the power of God working in the world for the good, and it is always present. How they can connect with it and how they can cooperate with it. The piece that you're talking about, Forming Children of the Light, really is based on a very simple examination of our human frailty, of our human situation. And let me see if I can take you on just a couple of steps. You know, the Bible tells us in the first chapters of Genesis that humanity made a decision. And their decision was to turn away from God, to turn away from seeking inspiration and strength from God and to rely on themselves. Satan is portrayed in those chapters as very interestingly and cunningly tempting us. He tempts us and says, you know, no, no, no. You know, you don't want to be in communion with God. You want to be gods unto yourselves. You want to be able to have what you want, when you want it, the way you want it. And of course, that sounds very good. Who doesn't? What Satan didn't tell everyone was that everyone else will be wanting to do the same thing. Now, if you put 30 people in a room, all who want what they want, when they want, the way they want it, you can see that things will head downhill pretty quickly. And, of course, that's what happened to humanity. All of a sudden, we viewed each other not as brothers or sisters, but as competitors, as people who might be in the way of what I want, when I want it, the way I want it. Maybe you want it, too. Maybe you'll get there ahead of me. And so fear was born in the hearts of men and women. And that fear began to work itself out. We became angry and resentful at things that didn't go our way, that people stood in our way, people who prevailed over us, the success of others we envied. And we started to accumulate these in our hearts. We harbored them. And over years as adults, we can see sometimes that beginning to happen. Resentments build and bitterness grows in the heart. And our attitude towards life is colored and poisoned in a way. And it is out of this pool of things in the heart that we also begin to weave words and actions. You know, the church calls these actual sins, in which we, from our anger or bitterness or resentment stored within, do things and say things that are cruel and damaging to God's, our relationship with God, cruel and damaging to other people in our relationship with them, and also damaging to our garden world that God created for us. And once that begins to happen, then some of these threads of words and actions get woven together in as groups. And, of course, that's when things get very, very sad, where people and whole races become estranged from each other. Hatred is born of this group and that group. And this cloud of darkness grows. And I hope you get a sense of that, how it grows from a little tiny place in the heart, but then it grows outward into the world. Mm-hmm. And it clouds our way of looking at life, and we don't see the beauty around us because of this cloud. We don't see the goodness in people. We look at them as, like I said, suspiciously, sometimes with fear. We fail to notice the potential for the good in them. We fail to notice their beauty. And we fail to draw it out of them and from them. And so, indeed, what we find God doing in the Bible is God speaks to us. He's grieved in his heart at what we've done to ourselves and what we've done to our world. And it's out of that grieving in God's heart that he draws close to speak to our heart about what we're doing. And so God teaches us the commandments to stop doing the things that weave this darkness. God commands us to stop doing it because it weaves the darkness. And also God teaches us something wonderful, something amazing, perhaps the best and most beautiful gift of faith, and that is that no matter how dark that darkness is, no matter how dense it is, he has said that he's larger than it, that his power and his grace surrounds that darkness, is always surrounding it. It may seem to us like, look, overwhelming and insurmountable, but it isn't, because his grace surrounds it. And he does something more. He teaches us that God's grace is piercing through that darkness all the time. Now, we don't usually notice it because we're preoccupied with our own resentments or anger or bitterness or hurt or whatever. But he's taught us that not only is it there, but it's piercing through. He's always working to break it apart, to get through with light and hope and strength. And I think all of us in our life experiences those breakthrough moments of grace when all of a sudden we see a beauty in something or someone, or we see the potential for the good in them, and it just bursts through. And then God taught us something even more amazing, and that is that he invited us to a relationship with himself in Christ, and said that if we walk with him, he would give us the power to say and do things that would actually pierce holes in the darkness. Small things, not overwhelming things, but things that pierce holes in the darkness. And that's where this writing came from. How do we train people to be wise about the world the way it really is, to be hopeful in the power of God and the presence of God and the grace of God at work that's always there, and how to walk with Jesus in a way that lets him inspire us to say and do things that actually pierce a hole in the darkness and sometimes unravel it, especially when somebody else is being victimized or hurt by it.
That's, for me, an incredible overview. But I have to tell you, I never looked at it as piercing holes in the darkness. What I always, it's one of my favorite writings of yours, and we'll get to them in just a few moments, but there are almost headers for different mm-hmm. portions of it, like speaking the truth, which we'll talk about, and naming the darkness for what it is, etc. And I used each one of those after reading it the first time as a personal checklist to make myself closer mm-hmm. to God in sincerity. And I never realized that what in fact it was doing was allowing me to pierce holes in the darkness.
Right, right.
That's an incredible way to look at it. I just thought it was keeping me closer to God and being a good person. So that was beautiful. It was beautiful explanation.
You know, I've always loved at the beginning of this writing, it says that we teach them the arts of being children of the light. And it truly is an art, and it's an aspiration for us more so than even teaching the curriculum in the mm-hmm. school. It's the teaching them the arts of being children of mm-hmm. the light, so much bigger. Tell us a little bit about speaking the truth. That's your first
sure.
category or header.
Well, I like to kind of segue into this by asking a question, especially of parents. But all of us, really. Why are we disappointed when our children fail to speak the truth to us the first time when we ask for it? we should be, shouldn't we, somewhat well aware that adults as well as children often fail to tell the truth. And for the same reason, because they're afraid of something. They're afraid of something, the consequences of something. And I think that what is of importance to forming human character is that once we have lied, that a person thinks about it and returns to amend what they said with the truth. You know, Mom and Dad, I told you what I told you when you asked me the question. And I've been sitting and thinking about it. And I want to amend what I said. And I think if a child comes back and says that to us, we should rejoice mm-hmm. that their conscience worked in them. We are all afraid. We all do things like that. But their conscience worked in them something greater than their fear. And they came back, and hopefully in the confidence of their relationship with Jesus, and they said, here's the truth. And the bottom line is that, you know, really, we teach the children to be children of light. We train them to turn to Jesus for courage to overcome this fear and to then draw strength from him and to come back and tell the truth. We teach children that the truth sets us free, mm-hmm. sets us free. And it's wonderful to observe that. It's wonderful to observe a child do that.
I want to back up for just one moment and say, again, this is probably one of my favorite articles that you've written, and I consider myself one of those children. So sure. I know we're talking school sure. children, and again, interpretations. And sometimes when people write things, you interpret them a certain way, and that's okay with the author because they're still touching.
Absolutely.
So for me, speaking the truth, not being per se a person who tells mistruths or untruths very often, but what my family would love to call me is an elaborator. I make situations bigger or better, or not purposely, just the story gets away from you. And when I read the speaking the truth portion of it, I am very guilty of that. And what it tells me is that I don't have to make more of myself for God. I right. can be who I am and be okay for God. You know, accept who I am and have others accept me as I am instead of saying the big fish tale, you know, or whatever.
Right. And that comes from faith, don't you think, Betsy, that if I put what is in the hands of God, he will unfold it and let it be what it can be,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I don't have to make it larger. I can just say, I have great faith. Okay, here's what it is. And God, what can we with you make it into what it's supposed to be?
Exactly, you know? Exactly. And I think that even though when we talk about the children, we're talking about our school-age children in the Diocese of Grand Rapids, Kalamazoo, anywhere across the country, and speaking the truth is always important. Speaking the truth comes in very different ways, you know, on how
oh, yeah.
you look at speaking the truth.
As a principal who has several children in her office throughout the week, and you know, Father Jim, that is very, very true that quite often it is so tempting when someone tells you an untruth to be resentful or to punish, you know, especially when it comes in terms of children, to punish. But at St. Thomas, and I'm sure in lots of other Catholic schools across our diocese and across the nation, it's a discipleship, not a discipline, and we do celebrate that truth that comes out.
Well, can you imagine, Susie, giving a child a sense of paying attention to the fear that causes them to tell the lie, and actually teaching them to pay attention to that fear. Why did I lie? Because I was afraid. Okay, I have a choice about what I do with that fear. Mm-hmm. I can let it rule me, or I can call on the Lord and say, Lord, let's go back and just, let's not be ruled by fear, you know, and go back and say what is the way it is. And wouldn't it be wonderful if the people we say it to, especially when they are Christians and when they are Catholics, they rejoice in the truth.
Right.
They
celebrate.
Rejoice in it and say, wow, that took courage to do that. That took the strength of the Lord to do that. And thank you. I think we can work with that.
Mm-hmm.
What an answer. You know, mm-hmm. what a response.
Absolutely. For me, as I said, I use it this kind of as a personal checklist, and the toughest ones for me are the next two.
Mm-hmm.
The toughest ones, naming the darkness for what it is. Could you please give me what kind of had you writing that statement in itself, naming the darkness for what it is, and an explanation of that? And I'll see if I interpreted it correctly.
Okay, I sure will. You know, all too often when a person senses that something is wrong in a situation, as adults, children too, they are strongly dissuaded by the attitude of the people around them from voicing their feelings and trying to identify the wrong at work, what's
right.
Not right. They're discouraged from saying anything. All too often you hear people say, you know, well, I kind of felt at the time something was wrong, but I didn't say anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's for a reason, because there is part of this, the darkness is this sense of you're just supposed to be quiet about it. And children of the light are trained to pay attention to their feelings. Pay attention to their feelings that something is wrong and not to suppress them. They're not to judge or complain, but they are encouraged to give their feelings expression and accurately name the wrong at work.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the way you shoved her was not right. Was not right. Something was wrong about that, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Instead of saying nothing at all, you know, voicing it not at all, you know, very often the greatest damage done by wrong is not by the fact that the wrong was done to the victim, if you will, the person, or that they were hurt, is that nobody said it was wrong.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody acknowledged it was wrong. That leads to this sense of, well, maybe I'm supposed to be treated that way. Or maybe I am worthless. Or maybe I have no value. Or maybe I'm supposed to be talked to that way, you know, because of where I fall. And when you give somebody the tool and say to them, even after they've been grievously injured, you know, and I've had this situation as a priest sometimes to tell people, you know, even in situations in the church, you know, and I say, I apologize for the way you were treated. That was wrong. And you just see this huge mm-hmm. relief come to them. Just relief to come to them, you know? People have a capacity of understanding that we all do things that we regret and are wrong. But to have it acknowledged puts us back in the light.
Absolutely, and I think actually I did okay with that one, Susie.
I think you did.
But for, believe me, we've all been in those situations before where we say to ourselves, this isn't right, and you get a funny feeling almost in your stomach. And as adults, I would hope that I know all of us in this room, we step up and say, wait a minute here, this isn't acceptable. But for children in especially junior high, I would think, and you can address this too, Susie, where something's not right, whether it's a nonverbal or verbal form of bullying, people don't want to step away from their peers and say, this is wrong. So they just go along with it through silence. So I don't know. Do you agree with that?
I do. And there's just nothing more beautiful than when a student and to watch a group when a student does acknowledge the wrong is able to say, wait a minute, you know, that was unkind or the way that you talked to that person was wrong. The whole group visibly sighs a sigh of relief. You can see the whole group kind of perk up and realize, you know, I should have said something, but I didn't, but thank goodness they did. So I think that's all a beautiful part of being children of the light, is being able to name it and not have fear, but rather that you're creating this beautiful place for all the other people that are maybe standing back and not saying anything.
Right. And what is usually said is not a definition of it or a can of it or a conclusion
right.
about it. It's just that something's not right with this.
Yeah.
Something's not right. And then we all can begin to unfold, once it's named,
what's not right? Mm-hmm. You know, mm-hmm. That's different than kind of putting in a can with a label on it. You know, well, you did this. No, something's not right. Something was not right with the way you, with what you said, or what I said, or what happened to this person. It's just out of right order, and that honors God, mm-hmm. because He calls us to live back in right order with Himself, with each other, and with the world around us.
And to step out for one moment from forming Children of the Light to the whole purpose of our show, which is Catholic education, that right there is mm-hmm. the beauty of Catholic education.
Absolutely.
Right.
That's the core of what we are. We have God. And mm-hmm. so to be able to name the darkness for what it is one of the real true benefits, I think, of Catholic education, mm-hmm. To be able to say this is what we should do. This is how we should act. This is what we shouldn't do, shouldn't act. And I think it gives children boundaries, don't you?
Oh, absolutely it does. It absolutely does.
It empowers them.
It empowers them and it empowers everyone. Mm-hmm. You know, just like I said, to hear someone say that restores a sense of security, mm-hmm. that everything doesn't go, that there are some things that fall out of the boundaries, mm-hmm. and there are. And that's deep down on a very, very deep level. That's very assuring to everyone, mm-hmm. you know, everyone.
I would agree.
We know how strong peer pressure is and how much it influences what children say and what they do. This is the beauty of this is that once it becomes a part of your culture, the peers that are doing the pressuring are the peers that are pressuring you to do the right. And that's a beautiful thing. It catches fire. Right. And that kind of brings us to your next point.
Yes, it does, very much so.
Which is extending compassion, which sounds really lovely and very easy. But the next line is even when it's disapproved. Can you get a little further into that?
Extending compassion without borders. Without borders. People do not like to think that they restrain compassion. But this is often a carefully inculcated feature of the way they were brought up. In a variety of ways, they were given to understand that there are borders at which their charity, their patience, their mercy must stop. Some people are to be included and some people are to be excluded from their compassion and vital concern. Children of the Light are trained to identify these borders and to ignore them. Mm-hmm. And to ignore them. For Children of the Light, mercy has no borders, and their vital concern extends to all. Now, where this is the most painful is when we see our children emulating it. You know, and to hear the story of a young person who comes to a large gathering of young people, and sometimes even in the context of a church gathering, youth group or whatever, and there is somebody that they had talked to and were friends with, but now a whole other group is present. And to fit in to that larger group, which has excluded this person, they have to go along with it. So can you imagine walking in a room filled with other people your age, and there is someone you know and you laughed with and talked with and did some things mm-hmm. with on the phone, or perhaps a context in which you played some sports or something, and you see the catch their eye and they're standing with a group of people. You wave at them and say hi, and they turn their back on yeah. you the other way and absolutely ignore you, because that group says that, you know, kindness, joy, and acceptance stops because you're not in. And how devastating that is. How very devastating that is. These are the people we're kind to. These are the people we're not. These are the people we talk to. These are the people we don't. And I think that's probably the most insidious darkness among children as they grow up, as we see them move from, you know, elementary into junior high and these groups form. Some of the greatest scars on a person's life that cause them to accumulate anger and bitterness and resentment are formed at that time. And yet a child of the light has the power to pierce it. It just takes one person, just one person in that group, to go over and say, "Hi, welcome, how are you? You look nice today." You don't have to pretend you're their best friend, but you just acknowledge them. You just broke to smithereens this, "Well, this is just the way it is. You know, this is just real life. This is just how it is. Get over it. Summer in, summer out. You don't belong. You do." And one person to cross the boundary in compassion and smashes the whole thing. Just smashes the whole thing. I love the power of that.
Absolutely. I do too. And before we go to the next, so I have to say, with those first three, the speaking the truth and then naming the darkness for what it is and extending compassion, even when it's disapproved, how in heaven's name did you articulate that? I mean, I'm sitting here listening to you thinking, I know exactly what you're talking about. I see it in my mind's eye, and yet I never took pen to paper. How did you articulate that?
Well, you know, probably because I kind of hound God in my own mind and always have said, "Lord, look, I want to find words that bring people in contact with the truth you're talking about, you know, because I'm watching so many people read their Bibles on Sunday and hear the sermon preached on Sunday and study the catechism, you know, and then somehow they walk out the door into real life and what you say just doesn't seem to get translated to where they're at. So I'm not thinking I'm better than the Word of God, but how can I find words that bring this out of the door of the church, and when people are reading it, make them think they're not in church, but they're actually outside. But the truth of what God is saying is now making an application to everything they see going on. I said, "Aha, okay, I get it." So, you know, I think God gets a bad rap for a lot of things, and I'm his protagonist, and I want to give him credit for the incredible love that he shows us and the power of his grace that is ours. And so if I can, and so really to answer your question is just, I say, "Lord, okay, how do I say this in a way that people will say, I know what you're talking about. I know exactly what you're talking about." And boom, there it is.
Did it flow right away, or did you have a lot of rewrites?
You know what? At the first, it flowed slow with lots of rewrites. Now it kind of flows, but then I go over it again and again and again, and the Lord is so kind. And sometimes I'll even be laying down in bed, and I'm like 15 minutes into my sleep, and all of a sudden, the right way to say it pop into my head, and I'm out of bed, going into the study, and grabbing my pencil and writing it down, and then going right back to bed.
And you can do that. You can go right back to bed. I'd be up all night writing.
Well, I wouldn't get any sleep if I kept going into my head.
Right.
You know, and so those are the rewrites now. And you know, I kind of like feel in my head that they're not me rewriting to make it perfect. It's God said, "This is the way I want to say it."
Yeah, exactly. True.
It's a poor time to tell me, but that's all right. You're God. I'm not.
And they always say, if you put it down on paper, then you can kind of close that chapter, not to put a pun in there, but close that, and then you can
You know, I know we're getting a little bit away from the writing, but I have to say I just appreciate so much how you take time. You're very conscious of the hours in the day, and working with you, I know that you claim certain hours of the day and certain times of the day and even certain times of the week as your own. And what a healthy attitude that is, because that allows you that space to write, to pray, to do whatever, but that's your time that no one can infringe upon, and that you hold sacred. And I just love that about you. And I would guess that to be able to write as beautifully as you do, you must need that time.
You know, Susie, in response to that, I have to thank here, and what a wonderful opportunity to do that. I thank the beloved people of my parish of St. Thomas, they allow me that time. They not only allow me that time, they understand why it's taken, and it's part of what I've been called to as a priest. And it's so beautiful. That sense of respect for that was there day one, from when I arrived.
Oh, that's excellent.
Isn't that beautiful?
Yeah, that really is.
Really,
my friend, we are selfish. We know that if we leave you alone for a little while, you'll write more beautiful things. You bless the parish.
Well, and I don't think you can write when you're back-to-back appointments and visits and this and that and everything. I don't think it would flow. You know, it wouldn't come. So.
Right, I don't think so either. We would take every ounce of your time if you allowed it, and it's beautiful that you're able to separate yourself a little bit and say, I need this time for myself.
Which, getting back to it now, these were the next groupings were a little bit easier for me. You know, I was like, okay, using one's strengths to encourage and lift up the weak. I think all of us as children of the light aspire to do that. I can't say we all do it on a daily basis, but certainly each time I read this and I kind of do a little inventory of myself, I say, yes, I can. This is one I can do, but explain it, please.
I do want to explain this because I really, really have to point out something to you, that our culture is very much anti this. We kind of talk out of one side of our brain, but then on the other side of our brain, we talk out of another side, you know. We say, you know, we should be using our strengths to lift up the weak, but on the other hand, we're saying you use your strength to be the best, to be the top, to get the gold medal, to be on top of the pack, to, you know, win the Masters, to do this. And that's what's important, is getting there. That's what your strength is for, to enhance you. And that's what you have it for, to get as far as you can, as high as you can, you know. And the only disappointment of the whole thing is, of course, that someday you have to die. But, you know, then you have to leave that all behind. So, you know, I want to be careful about that, because, you know, one of the blessed things we have at St. Thomas is a sports program that emphasizes, you know, the teachings of Christ, you know, and that your strength is not to prevail over your companions. Your strength is to use to make the team rise and work together and work as a whole. And that means surrounding the weak and, you know, supporting them with their strength, with your strength, and then their strength supporting you. You know, this is very contracultural, but it's very, very important. I would say this then, to explain this a little bit more. Everyone has strengths and weakness, talents and disabilities. Children of the light are trained to discover their strengths and talents and to take genuine joy in them. They should be able to name them and thank God for them. But they are taught, however, that strength or talent is given for the encouragement and service of those who are weaker than themselves. That's why they have it, to bless others, to be an instrument of God's blessing to others. And children of the light learn to experience their personal strength through encouraging, lifting up, and assisting them. In this way, they grow in confidence in themselves. And you know what? I want to emphasize that. They grow in confidence in themselves. If you are only enhancing your own strength to prevail over others, you will never grow in confidence of yourself. You will always be afraid that somebody else is going to walk in the room and be more superior than you. And when they are, you're going to be very, very insecure in that situation. Mm-hmm. And that is just an absolute fact of reality. But if you use your strength to enhance the weakness of others and lift them up, you will always be confident of yourself. And it doesn't matter who walks in the room, you will be confident of yourself. That is the only way self-confidence can truly, truly grow. And I think that point is missed again and again and again and again and again. And it's sad.
But when you see the synergy that happens when that's purposeful, I know it at our school, you have set the example by encouraging and have always hired people who are very diverse from each other. And it isn't just diverse in how they think, it's in their gifts. And when I look at our faculty, Absolutely, see that.
Susan.
I see there's I see that not
body
one
type,
of us.
Temperament, everything.
Age, everything, yes.
I want a child to go through that school, and yeah. I want to see someone just like me. Mm-hmm. And I can do it.
Yeah.
She does or he does. But then I want them to experience people that are different from me.
Yeah. As a member of that faculty, I know I can't tell you how many times I have felt lifted up by someone who has a gift. I'm looking at one right now, Betsy, who has
Thank
a gift
you.
Very different from mine.
Mm-hmm.
I couldn't possibly do what I do if I wasn't surrounded by those people. And I think everyone on our faculty feels that way. When you have that beautiful mix of people giving of their talent to lift others up, The way that feels is just unique. You can't find that anywhere unless people are consciously trying to do that. And I appreciate that ability to have that environment to work in, but also then to it's kind of fun when you have to look for a new person to join your faculty, because you're looking for not their qualifications necessarily. You're looking for, okay, what are your gifts?
Mm-hmm.
I'm mining you for your gifts.
Absolutely.
And I agree with that, but back to interpretation time for just a moment.
Always the taskmaster.
That would be me.
Sure.
It's one of those gifts we were talking about.
Sure.
I always interpreted, because I didn't mean to sound boastful when I said this one was an easy one for me, but I'm interpreting what you're saying, though, that every strength can also be a weakness. If I promote myself in whether it's an athletic way or an intellectual way or a compassionate way, you know, oh, come to me, I can, you know, help, that really then in retrospect becomes a weakness, because
sure
I'm missing the point of
right.
what the purpose is. And we have had some really good conversations of late about community,
mm-hmm.
and I think community really hones into this one, using one's strength to encourage and lift up, because I think it gives us all confidence.
Absolutely.
And I think you just said it perfectly a moment ago, using the athletic teams, that really there is no superstar. If you work as you're supposed to, everybody looks better.
Right.
You know, it's not just about you.
Yes.
So, but strengths and weaknesses are on that slippery slope. You know,
yeah.
you can go either way with them.
Yeah, it's very interesting if you think about it, too. You know, if you have a superstar on the team of one kind, the wrong kind, not everyone always enjoys them showing up.
Exactly.
But if you have a superstar of a different kind who uses their strengths to make everything, when you don't show up, everyone goes, oh, my gosh, we really miss her, him.
Mm-hmm.
Because when they're here, we're so much better.
Mm-hmm.
We are all so much better.
Absolutely.
You know, and this is that confidence that no one can take away from you.
Right. Absolutely.
You never have to be afraid that someone else is going to walk in the room and, you know, rob you of it.
Well, and not to continue with this one, because I know we have to move along, but just in recent sports news, I think that was demonstrated by a college player who has been sidelined the entire year with an injury, and actually was number one in the draft pick for the NBA, not because of what he looked like on the court — he wasn't on the court — but rather what he looked like on the, we call it in our world, the pine, the bench, because he, even though wasn't playing, was so engaged the entire season with his college team that the professional team said, who would not want a player like that on their
right.
team?
Isn't that amazing?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
And because everyone said he'll never get drafted, and he's number 21 because
okay.
of his...
Now, sometimes the light pierces the darkness, and that's one of those things.
Exactly.
That's more than human,
mm-hmm.
because really that's not the normal thing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Somehow there were some individuals involved with that decision and that whole thing, and maybe they knew it, and sometimes despite themselves, but the light breaks in.
Exactly.
And it's always there.
That's very
God
true.
God is always at work.
That's very true.
I love the next part, and it's one of the shorter ones, I think, in your writing, but you don't need to say much more than what you've written here, and that's seeing the beauty around you. And as an artist, I have to tell you, I just soak in every word of that paragraph, but it's a little deeper than that. I almost think next time you go to edit, put in seeing the beauty around you and in you, because that's the harder part of it. Easy to see beauty, but to be able to recognize it in yourself, we're trained not to.
Right, exactly right. We train the children to stop and to recognize beauty in things in the world, in something intricate in another person, and to name it. Mm-hmm. And to name it. And it's very, very important to name it and to acknowledge it. And because, first of all, God made the world beautiful. There's pigment in our eyes and not in other creatures' eyes to see these marvelous colors and these marvelous mm-hmm. plays. He wants us to be nourished by it and to delight in it and to rejoice in it. But here again, we see how profound God is, and that is, unless you're able to see the beauty in the world around you and in others, you will never see it in yourself. You will never see it in yourself. I mean, you can tell someone like a puppy, oh, you're beautiful and you're good and you're this and you're that and you're the third thing. And we hope that we build their self-esteem in this shallow way, but it really doesn't work, you know. It's only by teaching them to see beauty in the world around them, to acknowledge it and name it, that they will begin to see it in themselves. And that when someone sees it in them and acknowledges, they'll know it's accurate. It's not just a pat on the head. It's really true, you know. And they'll drink that in, and it will become a genuine self-confidence in themselves, self-esteem in themselves. And I think one of the things that motivated me about this one the most is the thought of how work-driven our society is and how many thousands and thousands of parents come home after a long day and get out of their car and go in the house, and there are their eager faces of their children, and it's all this excitement, and they're so preoccupied with what they're coming home with. They just kind of say, yeah, 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 and a quick thing, and, you know, just kind of brush them aside, you know, and you know, maybe a few words or whatever, and then they're off on their cell phone in another room following up on something, and I'm thinking, oh, my God, you know, you only live once. You know, you only live once, and this is what life's about, you know, these beautiful faces, this energy, this delight, you know, in your spouse or in your children, you know, and to miss that. And that strikes me as such a tragedy, such a true tragedy to not see it. And I guess that image came to me the other day at the end of vacation Bible school. We were having the last session, and there was a dad. And he, you know, he had four of his kids around him. They were all in Bible school, and he had two of them in his hands, and he was dancing back and forth in the pew, just waving these kids back. And I thought, oh, my gosh, this man is going to say someday he really lived.
Yeah.
He truly lived, you know, because he saw the beauty and in what was his and what was around him.
And again, interpretation time. I thought that was one of the easiest ones, and in reality, it's not, because I'm a person, as Susie just said a moment ago, who gets so caught up in the process of it that you can't set it aside. You know, it's more of setting it up or arranging it or to so others can see it, but then you miss it.
Right. Exactly.
And that's so.
Exactly. And that's why, in my opinion, art is so important to a Catholic school curriculum. Mm-hmm. It is so important. But it's tailored to awakening this sense in the student. It's not teaching them how to do things. It's teaching them to see beauty, to draw beauty, to make beauty in music or sound or song, to notice it and to delight in it, which is really the importance of art and it's a very, very important role. And I would hope that everyone would have some art that they did, you know. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Mine's garden, to see the colors dancing on the blossoms as they unfold, the season moves on.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yep.
The next one is seeing the goodness in others. And I had a key statement in that one that I really liked, and that is seeing value and encouraging the good. So why don't you expound on that one a little bit?
Right. I would like to, because this one is really important. It sounds simple, but there's a little bit to it, too. Children of the light see the good in themselves and in others. They value it, and encourage its expression and growth. But children in the light are also to recognize the not so good in themselves and their other. They're not Pollyanna. This is about engaging a real world. And the key here is they name to Jesus and ask God's Spirit to lay hold of them and dislodge from their minds and hearts anything that's not so good. They learn not to be afraid of it. It's not to be feared. It doesn't make them a bad person. It's just lodged in there, preventing them from being who God wants them to be. And to be able to see it and not blame themselves or beat themselves up, but instead to turn to God and say, you know, I need this moved out. I need it moved out. And to know that God is ready, that Jesus is ready to do just that. They just have to ask. He'll pull, they'll push, and it will be dislodged. And they're trained to establish healthy patterns of thought and behavior to restrain and correct the not so good in themselves and encourage others to help them do the same thing. So if they see somebody, you know, and this is where I mean it's a little bit more profound, you know, we label, you know, oh, there's Johnny and Johnny does that, you know. And Johnny, that's Johnny's problem, and Johnny has that problem, you know. And we children of the light do a little bit more than that. It's not just labeling Johnny and Johnny has his problem. It's wanting to help Johnny pull whatever isn't supposed to be there that's not so good out and get free. But you also have to be able to see the good in Johnny. Mm-hmm. You know, Johnny, I really love it when you do this, you know. But gosh, when you do that, man, you know, that kind of trips you up, you know. You know, how can I help you? You know, do you turn to Jesus? Do you ask his help? Do you ask him, you know, so let's push this part out of you. There's so much good in you, you know. You don't have to be, let this rule you. And that piece is the important piece. Getting away from labeling and getting into this desire to help others do what we would like to do ourselves. And that is ask God's help to get those things that came from somewhere in the past, maybe, or lodge themselves in us in some way and move them out.
That kind of coincides with Susie, you and I last week learning that sometimes things have to die in order to have something else.
Yes.
Be born, mm-hmm. Which is, of course, the core of our faith. But
Absolutely. That's
kind of, am I translating that correctly?
Sure.
Would you think?
Absolutely.
You know?
I'm pretty impressed with that.
That I did that?
Yeah, that you were able to take the incarnational aspect of
absolutely,
this.
Absolutely, Betsy. And, Jesus that says that. You know, the old self has to die, and the new self is born.
Exactly.
It's
so
always working together.
Exactly. So you're exactly right about the labeling, you know, and it's not as much Johnny's fault as it is the conditions we put upon Johnny to always have. We have
right.
the expectation that that's what Johnny's going to do.
Right.
But if we help him have that die, if you will, then
right.
a new thing will rise.
Right. But it's always hand in hand. You know,
mm-hmm.
And why that helps Johnny so much is it helps him see himself as he really is. A lot good, but some things that trip him up, they don't dominate and they don't have to. They can be dislodged. There is a God who loves him and will help him dislodge it. And there are friends who encourage it and will applaud it. You know, but if you're not doing both, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
It's not going to happen. If all you do is the critique, you know, the label of critique and the blame, it's not going to happen.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I agree wholeheartedly.
The next little section you've got here is great. It's called Laughing Heartily in Joy. And your first line is, children of the light are taught to laugh heartily at themselves and the idiosyncrasies of life and to find joy in the success of others. Oh, that's so beautiful.
That's
right.
Exactly what I picked as my favorite statement, too.
I know. I just love that.
Right.
Right. That's important because life is a lot of idiosyncrasies.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we do peculiar things. Our personalities are quirky and do peculiar things. And it's all right to laugh at ourselves. And it's beautiful to laugh at ourselves. Children of the light are taught to see those idiosyncrasies in themselves or in the human condition, you know, and not get all dark about it, but to find them, you know, humorous and to laugh and to let their laughter ring out and with delight and joy. But they are also taught never to laugh at another.
Mm-hmm.
Never to laugh at another, you know. And so they find genuine delight in themselves, even in their imperfections sometimes or their struggles. And good friendships are formed around the ability to laugh with each other about those things, mm-hmm. you know. And at the same time, that growing sense of laughter and delight teaches you never, ever to use that beautiful gift, you know, to demean another. And they go, it's one of those things, again, you know, they go together. They'll only grow together. Only if you've learned to laugh at yourself and those idiosyncrasies will you not laugh at others.
And that brings to mind being an early childhood educator. And that's something that we talk about all the time in the mm-hmm. classroom. A little mishap just this past spring that one of my children had, and another child said right away, don't laugh. It's not funny. And the one who the mishap occurred to said, oh, no, yes, it is. and then everyone was given permission. Because that four-year-old said, it's okay to laugh with me mm-hmm. right now. I tripped up here. And I just thought how profound even our
Beautiful.
Youngest are.
Beautiful.
You know,
Beautiful.
truly.
We have a lot to learn from our youngest.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's why I love that population so. But the very flip side of that, though, is the weeping. Weeping deeply is feeling sorrow for others. So
yes.
Let's look at the other side of that.
Children of light are taught to share and express sorrow. They're taught to feel the pain of others and to share their sorrows. They're taught to grieve their own sins and those of others and mourn the consequences of sin because they do a lot of destruction. But yet all of this, they lift up to God in prayer for healing. And this is the key piece. You just don't feel bad for someone. You know, that's pity of the weak, worst kind. This is genuine grieving with others that wants them healed. That wants it healed, and to lift up these sorrows in prayer is so important, to lift them up before God for healing, you know. And they're trained to console others and to act to relieve the pain of others, above all to invite them to know the presence and healing power of Jesus. This deepens their bonds with Jesus and brings them into solidarity with humanity, with their fellow human beings. You know, remember I told you at the beginning that God grieved what we had done with our hearts. He grieved the path we took, you know, away from communion with Him, each other, and the world, and into ourselves so deeply in self-absorption. And He grieved, and that moved love. And that's what we'd love to see echoed in children, mm-hmm. the grieving of God that wants to draw near and heal. And made in the image of God, if you will, from Genesis, that this is how we teach them to emulate that image of God.
Well, your next section is, there's a line in here that I just love because it's something that all of us aspire to do this. It's called sacrificing self to provide for others. And the line that I have to read like three times to myself is, they're taught to do this anonymously without drawing any attention to themselves. So that when others find out about it, they marvel at the providence that God provided for them. It's rather than crediting a person.
You know, I want to say something at the beginning here. I don't think, I really don't think Catholic education is about teaching children to be nice.
Yeah.
It's about teaching them to be heroic.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being nice will never, ever satisfy the soul and give value and worth and meaning to a lifetime. Mm-hmm. But being heroic will. Being heroic will give one sense that one lived for a purpose and for a reason, and all they were drawn into it, and it was good, and it made a difference, and it made a difference. And so children of the light are taught the value of sacrificing yourself, the positive value of sacrificing yourself and what you have to provide for the needs of others, not to be nice, not to do charity, but to be heroic. To be heroic, a quality of person, to achieve a quality of person. They're taught to do this without drawing attention to themselves. They desire those for whom they provide to be left wondering at the goodness and providence of God rather than thanking or admiring them. That's a key piece. Mm-hmm. I really don't want you to thank me. I want you to wonder, for instance, when we buy something for a family and we know they don't have the funds and it's Christmas and we buy those things, you know, and we leave them all on the doorstep and we ring the doorbell and they never see our face, okay, and they bring them in. They are wondering what in heaven's name moved human beings to buy presents for people they don't know and will never see and will never thank them and put them on our doorstep. And I want to suggest to you that's a moment in which they might just say there must be a God.
Yes.
There must be a God who moves mysteriously in people to do for people they don't even know, you know, who do for what they don't even know. You know, and I'll tell you one little story with this because it's my most delightful thing in the world. I'll not name who, but I know a family and who are a family of means, and they do a lot of good things. And the whole family was at an event that was inaugurating something that they had been key in contributing to. And they were standing in, amongst the many, 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 many people in the lobby. And their son went over to the board where all the names of all the people who contributed were. And he took his hand, dad by the hand, and he said, "Dad, that's anonymous. Is that us?" And the dad said, "Yeah, son, that's us."
Aww.
Isn't that amazing?
That
isn't
is
that
amazing.
Breathtaking?
Yes, it is. Yeah.
Yes,
it is.
Yes, son, that's us. That's us.
And
wow.
That's amazing. And one of the things, and then I'm conscious of our time, and I think the one we're ending with is perfect, but I like it that it says agents of God. That's what I
yes.
picked out of, and that's what anonymous is.
Yes.
You know, truly. So,
yes.
And our time is short, but really, truly, this is the perfect thing to end on, and that is drawing light from light, making conscious contact with God every day.
Every day.
Every day.
Every
so
single day.
We'll give you the last minute to tell us how
okay.
what you think.
All right. Very good. Children of the light are not light unto themselves. They understand that the same venial and sometimes dark things that work in the minds and hearts of others also work in them. So they're full of compassion. Alone, their own light will all too easily be overshadowed and then extinguished by these things. Children of the light live from the light, from Jesus, from God's light, not their own. They passionately believe that the fullness of that light shines in Jesus, who they know is with them always, and they are confident that he holds the world and all things in his power. Children of the light are taught to make conscious contact with Jesus continually throughout their day and to draw strength from him. And they attend to the movement of the Holy Spirit in their hearts and the prompting them to do words of wisdom and acts of love. This brings them unassailable freedom and confidence and joy in living. And very simply, they simply walk through the day, and before anything they do, they say, "You know, Jesus, you're with me. Show me what's going on. Show me what good I can do, and move me to do it." And that's it. It's a mental prayer that acknowledges the presence of the light, and Jesus will not fail. And they will experience that he's real. And that's the key piece. Not believe that he's real. They'll experience him as real because he will have answered that prayer. They would have felt the movement in their heart.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
Father Jim, we just thank you for sharing this hour of your life with us
here. Wonderful.
And we thank our listeners for spending this hour with us. You can read any of Father Jim's writings because we have put them on our website, and that is www.stthomasgr.org. And we have a tab that's called Welcome. If you click on that tab, you will find Father Jim's Children of the Light and lots of his other writings there. Read them. It will enrich your day. So we thank you, everyone. God bless you. Have a wonderful day.
today. Thank you.
You've been listening to Unapologetically Catholic on Holy Family Radio. If you have questions, comments, or suggestions, please email us at unapologeticallycatholic@holyfamilyradio.net. If you would like to listen to this program again or share this program with a friend, audio copies are available online at holyfamilyradio.net. Thank you for listening, and join us again next week. May God bless your day.